Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Latest merch on the website StuDoesMerch.com is Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory. Use the code STU10, you'll save 10% off your order. Got the mugs, got the t-shirts, great stuff for the election. By the way, if you want to check out the show, YouTube is a great place to do it. Of course, we got Pluto TV, we got Blaze TV, all that. But go to YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to like and comment on the videos and hit the bell for notifications. Greg Wrightstone is here for our annual Earth Day celebration. Donald Trump is having his Manhattan trial kick off with opening statements. We've got the latest on that. But we start by doing Hamas on campus. Yes, it's a wonderful time of year. Hamas has finally made it to campus, and they got a lot of fans, apparently, right there. And this all kind of ties into this big funding bill. So let's start there. U.S. House passes $95 billion in Ukraine, and Israel aid sends to Senate. The bills provide $60.84 billion to address the conflict in Ukraine, including the $23 billion to replenish U.S. weapons, stocks, and facilities. Just in case, just a little focus on that particular part of the quote. The fascinating part here is $23 billion to replenish U.S. weapons, because we've given them a bunch of weapons already that were supposed to be ours. So we're now replenishing them. Isn't that wonderful? $26 billion for Israel, $9.1 billion for humanitarian needs, $8.12 billion for the Indo-Pacific. That's basically the Taiwan part of the funding. The Senate is set to begin considering the House-passed bill on Tuesday with some preliminary votes that afternoon. Final passage was expected sometime next week, which would clear the way for Biden to sign it into law. Now, there's a lot of reasons to be for or against this aid. It's actually, with our Congress, apparently quite popular. Right, the House voted for it overwhelmingly. But let's go through those, and then we can discuss how every House voter member voted on aid to Ukraine, Israel, and more. Is the Washington Post headline. And here are some of the votes. Indo-Pacific, this is the Taiwan stuff. Pretty popular. 385 to 34 was the final vote. Only 34 Republicans voted against it. Democrats went 207 to 0 on that front. Ukraine aid, not quite as popular. The vote for Democrats, again, 210 to 0. But GOP actually opposed it more than supported it. 101 in support, 112 in opposition. But overall votes still very popular, 311 to 112. The Israel-Gaza situation, more popular than Ukraine. 173 to 37 for the Democrats. 193 to 21 for the Republicans, for a total of 366 to 58. Again, we've heard a lot about the opposition to these things. Generally speaking, there's not much of it. There are a few people on either side that are pretty loud in opposition for varying reasons of varying merit. But generally speaking, this is a pretty popular idea to fund even Ukraine. You know, we've talked a lot here on The Blaze about how maybe not a great idea. Even on the generalized Republican side, still relatively popular. It's sort of like the everyday Democrat as it compares to, some of the AOC types, right? Like, you see a lot of times the AOC types make a lot of noise, but that's happened on the right with Ukraine funding. A lot of opposition has made a lot of noise, and, you know, I tend to agree with some of that opposition for varying reasons. But generally speaking, it's not all that unpopular, at least among our elected representatives. And even the polling among Republicans is pretty split on Ukraine. It's a little negative now. Used to be on the positive side. It's a little negative now, but that's where it are. By the way, one of the things they jammed in here to try to get this done with Republicans was the TikTok ban. And that passed, again, overwhelmingly, 174 to 33 for Democrats, 186 to 25 for GOP, for a total of 360 to 58. And if it does, I mean, look, we don't know how the TikTok ban, it's not really a ban, that's just really them getting forced to sell it. If that goes through, it could be terrible news for people who lip sync to songs I don't like, I guess. Terrible news for the Chinese Communist Party, who will no longer be able to harvest information of American citizens. And I know that's terrible for many, many people. By the way, Reels exists. It's the same freaking thing. Okay? If they shut down TikTok, you can go to Reels and do all your dumb crap there. How about that? How about that? Finally, I don't know that necessarily means anything on the merit of the bill or whether it will hold up to the scrutiny of the Supreme Court, but just generally saying, let's not overstate how bad this would be for society. It would be fine. In fact, it would probably free up a few minutes for a bunch of really stupid people. And then border security was another thing Republicans tried to pass. Of course, that one's not going to pass. GOP wanted it 210-0. Five Democrats came along for the ride, but the 215-199 did pass. However, not going anywhere in the Senate. Okay, so that's the voting update. And it's fascinating because you see a lot of Republicans voting against some of these bills. And generally speaking, it's on ideological grounds. You talk to a Thomas Massie, for example. Thomas Massie just does not support foreign aid in almost any form. So he's doing that from a libertarian perspective and saying that's not our job. We shouldn't be doing that. I'm not judging necessarily the particular back and forth and iterations of each one of these bills. I'm saying no to foreign aid. I think that's a position that, while you might not agree with it, you could support. He's saying, I don't do this, so I'm not going to do it for Israel. I'm not going to do it for Ukraine. I'm not going to do it for Taiwan. I'm not going to do it for anybody. That's an ideological position I can understand. I don't understand some of the, well, I do understand. I do understand exactly what's going on. But I do, the votes against Israel are far more fascinating to me because Democrats went 100% all in on Taiwan and Ukraine. And then there were, what was that number, 30? Yeah, I have the vote number here. We just looked at it. Israel, 37 Democrats are like, nah. And you look at the list and it's all like AOC, Ilhan Omar, Jamal Bowman, Jayapal, all the names, Maxine Waters, all the far left progressive names you'd 100% expect to say no to Israel. Are they ideologically against funding? Because, gosh, they voted for the other ones, and they seem to be willing to vote to fund almost anything. Bridges to nowhere, I mean, anything, they'll pop in there. So all of a sudden, they're against this one thing, though, Israel. That's not because they're anti-Semitic, not because they're just against this one funding cause of these people who just had an attack launched on them by Iran and had the October 7th attack against them. But just so you know, not anti-Semitism at all. I'm sure there's not even a threat of that in there. I mean, and the other thing, too, is like a lot of Republicans opposed the Ukrainian funding for a bunch of different reasons. Like, you know, I think there's a reason to believe that maybe you're risking a further escalation there. The more we get involved, wanting to avoid World War II, maybe or three, maybe not, having too much faith in the Biden administration to avoid such things. Plus, there's the ideological, just general opposition to foreign aid. But like, there's no accusations that we just don't like Ukrainians, right? Like, Ukrainians are fine. I want them to win. I don't think I can pay for them to win. We just gave them $60 billion and they made no progress. So I'm very skeptical as to whether they are able to win. However, if I'm just got rooting interests, I want Ukraine to win that war. That being said, I still am opposed to it. Not because I hate Ukrainians, but because I'm concerned about the escalation in that region leading to something that ends with giant missiles falling on my head. Where that's not really the case with Israel. It's interesting to notice that. And I think as we get onto campus here, you might understand exactly what's going on, because the progressive faction of the Democratic Party is just sort of basically pro-Hamas at this point. Other than wearing their Hamas t-shirts and tank tops into Congress, I don't know what else they can basically say on this particular front. We will see how that escalates. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene is pretty pissed off about that. She's very anti the Ukraine funding and has said she will try to vacate Speaker Johnson if he goes forward with it, which he has now gone forward with it. So Marjorie Taylor Greene was very upset about that and says that she will boot him out. Thomas Massie is on board with that, a couple of others. And the Democrats were the ones cheering for this particular passage as this went down. This is Thomas Massie posting this on Twitter. They've all got Ukraine flags. Again, I got nothing against Ukrainians. I really don't. But the argument for us being involved in the Ukraine war is an argument not about helping Ukraine. It's about helping America. right? Like, it's supposed to be a situation where we're pushing back against the Russian advance. It's supposed to give us a way to push back and weaken Russia while this is going on. We don't lose any troops. We don't lose any anything except money. And, like, you can buy or not buy that argument, but that's the argument, what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be that, actually, this is good for America. But then they're waving around their Ukrainian flags. Now, look, again, I'm fine with Ukraine, but, like, the question is this our responsibility, and how out of control is this going to get if we go forward with it? And all this is going on, including the Israel funding, as we look at this general tenor of the situation at campuses all around North America, really. Tensions are so high at Columbia ahead of Passover that all classes will be virtual today. This is what they know. You know how they say, don't negotiate with terrorists? Columbia is living up to that standard. A lot of people are saying they're not. A lot of people are saying, look, they're negotiating with terrorists. No, they're not. They're just giving in to terrorists. That's not a negotiation. They're just immediately folding to their demands. That's not negotiation. They're just folding. And that's so much better. So it's so bad there at Columbia right now with all these crazy protests, and they're blatantly anti-Semitic protests, that Columbia has a rabbi warning Jewish students to just go home and don't come back because of the extreme anti-Semitism. Now, this is stunning in this country. The fact that we have rabbis who are so terrified as to the radical nature of the student population in this country that they don't think Jews should go to school anymore. Think about that. What is this, the 1940s? What is going on? This is where we are in the United States of America right now. Now, you want to look at some of the evidence for that? Here is Columbia. These are protesters out in front of Columbia talking about their views on a two-state solution. I was told from the river to the sea was a statement of unity and aspiration. And yet they're saying here they don't want a two-state. They want all of it. Huh. What a surprise. By the way, I'm sorry if that's stuck in your head all day long now. What a catchy tune. We don't want no two-state. We want all of it. It's actually part of the double album that Taylor Swift just released. So just so in case you didn't know. The White House is condemning blatantly anti-Semitic protests amid ongoing unrest at Columbia. Give a quarter of a point to the White House here for actually getting this one right. Here's what they said. While every American has the right to peaceful protest, calls for violence and physical intimidation targeting Jewish students in the Jewish community are blatantly anti-Semitic, yes, unconscionable, and dangerous. Correct, correct. They have absolutely no place on any college campus or anywhere in the United States of America. Echoing the rhetoric of terrorist organizations, especially in the wake of the worst massacre committed against the Jewish people since the Holocaust, is despicable. We condemn these statements in the strongest terms. Now, of course, it wasn't actually Biden who came forward with that. That was Andrew Bates, the White House deputy press secretary. So they couldn't even get KJP to give the statement. But, you know, they went down to the fourth string and got somebody to say something good about the Jews. So that's wonderful. I will say, low bar to clear here. Low bar to clear when everyone's saying they want the Jews basically wiped off the planet. It's nice of you to come out and say, we don't think they should be. And that is lowest hurdle, low to the ground. It's a low hurdle, but they cleared it at least on this particular day. Now, Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib will never clear that hurdle because that's not what they want. They don't want them to be in Israel and they don't want them to be anywhere. That's basically the truth. Ocasio-Cortez, Tlaib criticized appalling suspension of Omar's daughter at Columbia. So Ilhan Omar's daughter, she goes to Columbia and, she is in the middle of these protests. She gets arrested because of everything going on and suspended, or she gets, I guess, suspended, not, you know, she gets dragged off by police. I don't remember this being a positive. Like, I never went into life thinking I can't wait till I get arrested. I'm going to be so proud. But Ilhan Omar says she's very proud of her daughter for this. And now Ilhan Omar's daughter is saying she's homeless and can't eat, which is fascinating because her mom has plenty of money. And also, her justification for this was she no longer has access to her meal plan because she's been suspended and instead would have to depend on prepackaged foods provided by the university, which basically that's the same as starvation. Like if you go back to the Holodomor on the Ukrainian people back in the day, that's what they had. They had prepackaged food from the Soviets. And that's very consistent across. You remember We Are the World, the Ethiopia famine? They were complaining about only having access to prepackaged food. So if you remember your history right, you'll know the trials and tribulations that Ilhan Omar's daughter is going through right now. Of course, it wasn't just in New York. Let me take you north of the border. This is Ottawa. And Ottawa, they had another new chant they broke out for the weekend. Listen to this one.
From the river to the sea.
Classic.
From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea, you reply with Palestine is almost free because our resistance attacks are proof that we are almost free. October 7th is proof that we are almost free. Long live October 7th. Long live the resistance.
Now,
long live the Intifada. Long
the Intifada.
Live every form of resistance.
Yay! Woo! Woo! Okay, so that's enough of that. But basically, if you couldn't hear that, the audio is a little rough to hear. But basically, first of all, he chides them for not understanding that. When I say for the river to the sea, you have to say Palestine will be free. Don't just repeat from the river to the sea. So that's number one. But number two was the new phrase, long live October 7th. Remember, that's the day all the rapes and beheadings occurred. So they're excited about that. That's great. Also at Yale, police storm Yale University's campus with riot gear, arrest students as hundreds stage anti-Israel protests. Now, let's give you another example of this. This is anti-Israeli protesters blocking a Jewish man. Watch.
What is the best give you like?
No authority.
There's another video I saw of them trying to just cross the street and police, this is I think was in the UK, police stopping them from Jews from crossing the street because the Jews would incite a riot of some sort. It would be that they'd be the victim of it, or that they were going to incite it somehow. That's where we are. Now, maybe we'll go over this a little bit more detail tomorrow. This is up from the Toronto Sun. Anti-Israel protesters becoming more radical, openly embracing terror groups. They discovered a pamphlet from these protest groups that go through all sorts of really bad things, such as, they say, this is from the actual pamphlet, like past terror groups such as Germany's Red Army faction, are asked to go into cells and to make it more secure. The manual then urges cells to pick your target, anyone who enables or profits from the Israeli weapons industry. They say they have to do reconnaissance, advising people to borrow people's dogs to walk by so they don't look suspicious while doing reconnaissance on certain areas. They need to plan action, which includes smashing windows and exterior equipment, blocking companies to external pipes, including using concrete, as anti-Israel protesters did on railway tracks in Toronto this week. It will cause disruption for the target. They're talking about breaking into your target and damaging the contents inside is obviously a very effective tactic, and on and on and on and on and on. And also, don't leave anything behind, because that could potentially get you seen, and cover your face. All these things to hide their criminal activity. That's who these people are, and that's how these people have always been. And, you know, if you think the development on campus is a little troubling, it really is. I mean, we have basically had an entire conversion of these campuses into pro-Hamas factories at this point. And it's amazing, and I'll leave you with this, it's amazing to see this and how far we've come. Let me take you back to 2015. This went a little bit viral on the internet this weekend as people rediscovered it. A 2015 awkward trip to drop off your kid at college. It turns a little bit too prophetic here in the Saturday Night Live Sketch Watch.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You got it, kiddo.
Looks like your ride's here.
You be careful, okay?
Dad, it's just ISIS.
Take care of her.
Death to America.
ISIS. We'll take it from here, Dad.
I mean, we're basically there. Congratulations, you're paying $60,000 a year to indoctrinate your children into ISIS, or at least the latest version of it. We'll get into more of that a little bit later on. Also, we have a Earth Day special, of course, today. Greg Wrightstone is going to join us. He's coming up next. Just like it was way back during the pandemic, we are now facing drug and medical supply shortages in the United States. As of March, there were more than 200 drug shortages right here in the U.S., and it's looking like it's going to get a whole lot worse before it gets any better. Healthcare experts have pointed to shortages, domestic production, and the Drug Supply Chain Security Act, which I'm sure has no negative parts to it whatsoever, as trends to watch this upcoming year. You wouldn't think that stuff like this could happen in America, but we have been seeing it for years now. That's why you should have a Jace case. Have one on hand. Why not? It's got five life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. All you have to do is fill out a simple form online, and you'll have it there ready in case you need it. And, of course, there are dozens of add-on options as well. Jace Medical is empowering people just like you to be able to take your family's health into your own hands. Check them out today. JaceMedical.com. Enter the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at JaceMedical.com. J-A-S-E Medical.com.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
I'm happy to welcome Greg Wrightstone back to the program. He's the executive director of the CO2 Coalition and author of A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity, which is available now wherever you get your books. Greg, thanks so much for coming back on the show. Happy Earth Day.
Oh, back at you. You know, Stu, it was a year ago, I wrote a commentary. I said it was time for us to abandon Earth Day. We've accomplished all the objectives. It's time to move on. These people are using it now just to get crazy stuff, trying to control every aspect of your lives. But I've rethought that, and I think we should embrace this and make this basically an Earth Day that we should celebrate. Because, as you know, the last time I was on with you, we talked about how Earth's ecosystems were just thriving and benefiting, and humanity was benefiting also along with it, the human conditions improving. And it's because of warming and more CO2. So I say let's celebrate Earth Day from now on. We should celebrate warming and more CO2.
I mean, I agree with you here. Obviously, I mean, it's hard to disagree that life has gotten better since oil came around, since we started using fossil fuels. That there's been a massive improvement as far as civilization goes, modern civilization. Yet the left continues to oppose it. And part of this, I think, Greg, is that they look at it, the framework is all wrong, right? They're looking at it as what is good or bad for the Earth. And what does that mean? I mean, isn't our goal to make the Earth a better place for human beings to flourish in? Or should we be thinking about this as some sort of zero-sum game where everything that's good for us is an injury to the Earth?
And that's why it sure seems that they're looking at it. They're taking anything that they can just twist in any which way and connect it this bad, connect it to climate change. Last year, they were promoting the fact that there was an increase in toenail fungus that was related to climate change. It just, I think people are getting the idea now. I think they've overreached, actually. with all these crazy things they're linking to it. But again, it's they refuse to recognize anything beneficial and completely blow out of the sphere of reality anything that's bad. In fact, we just published today, we published in about 30 minutes a paper on increasing CO2 and nutritional value of crops. It's hard to dispute, and they can't. It's beyond dispute that more CO2 is increasing productivity of our agricultural yields. It's incredible, and it's because of more CO2. So now they've twisted and said, well, yeah, there are more crops being grown, but the nutritional value is declining. And so we've had Dr. Happer, Dr. Albert Glitzel, who's a member from Paraguay, top agronomist, and they've put together this report refuting the idea that nutritional values of crops are decreasing as the productivity and the per acre bushels are increasing. And so this was a much needed paper. Nothing's been done like it before. And that's part of what we do here at the CO2 Coalition is put together a team of experts. And then we go back and we take a look and we use the science, facts, and data to dispute what these climate grifters and what I call the disciples of disinformation, these people spreading climate lies and other. And the only reason why are they doing it? They want to control every aspect of our lives, from what we drive to how we heat our homes to what we eat. They want you eating bugs and not sirloin steak. No, thank you. I enjoy sirloin and I enjoy living a high carbon lifestyle. And I can do both and sleep very well at night. I'm not harming the planet, nor will you.
You know, and I think like the proof is in the pudding, right? I mean, billions more people are being fed now than they were years and years ago. We've lived through an incredible revolution where this has happened, where it used to be children were starving all over the place. That's happening much less frequently now. And when you look at the overall picture when it comes to CO2, for example, in China, they're using much more coal, much more fossil fuel to power their country. And, you know, this type of stuff gets ignored. I mean, there was a big announcement that came up, but China accounted for 2/3 of new global coal plant capacity in 2023. They have added 48.4 gigawatts, I like gigawatts, of electricity. I'm going gigawatts, I don't care. I just watched Back to the Future with my son.
That's so, all right.
It's considerably more than the 1.21 gigawatts needed for time travel, Greg. And, you know, they're doing this every single year. This totally wipes out the efforts of the rest of the world to lower their carbon, and no one even comments on it.
Exactly. It's anything we do, even if, forget about China. It's hard to do it, but forget about it. Anything that we do is so small. It's the warming that would be averted by us going to net zero is too small to measure. And to the earlier to your point about how life is better, two complete in terms of health, human health, two charts in my new book. One was I related famines, and famines and drought were the most dangerous of all the climate catastrophes throughout the last thousands of years. And I took a look at the famine deaths per year and compared it to temperature. I mean, those famine deaths were just plunging as CO2 levels rose. And I also have another chart in there comparing crop production, population growth. And we find that crops are greatly, and the production of our food resources are greatly outpacing that of population growth. So this idea, this Malthusian misguided theory that we have too many humans on Earth is just blown out of the water by, again, you hear me say it all the time, science, facts, and data. But we do need to follow the science to find out that we're feeding a growing population and then some. What's also interesting in that chart, they also showed acreage that's under production. It was flat. So it's not that we're planting more. We're just growing more crops because of warming temperatures, means longer growing seasons, CO2 fertilization effect, and then the use of nitrogen fertilizers. Those three things are really fueling this crop productivity enhancement.
And it's amazing. I mean, under any rational time this would be considered a miracle, right? Like the fact that you can do all these things for this many people is something that really we've never had in all of global history until right now. And instead, we have people trying to, the degrowth movement, we have people who sound a lot like the Malthusians of the past, who are, you know, fueling our policy. The president did come out today and made this big Earth Day, of course, 2024 proclamation. They're putting billions of dollars into things like the Civilian Conservation Corps, the Climate Corps. They're targeting microplastics as some major damage. I mean, you see the efforts of the government. Are any of these productive at all, Greg?
Oh, not at all. And if you look at the false claim of microplastics, there's to be this claim of a huge plastic group out in the Pacific Ocean. Yeah. It's not there. You can travel there and not find it. And what you find also are some of these plastics that actually wash up on the beaches. It's not good, but the animals like crabs and other things use those as rafts, and they live on them. Birds do eat them, but that's what they do with stones and things in their gullet that helps in digestion. And they're just, it's crazy things. They're talking about extinctions and mass extinctions increasing. And as we're leading and going into the sixth great extinction, but what they do say, and I agree with the UN, is the greatest threat to species and endangered species is a loss of habitat. Well, what's their solution to solve a climate crisis? It's to pave over tens of thousands of square miles with solar panels, cut down thousands and thousands of acres of mature forests with wind turbines and put them up across grasslands. It seems like they have to destroy the environment in order to save the environment. And I say no thank you. No thank you. Not this American. Mm.
Let me get one more from you here, Greg, on electric cars. Obviously, this has been a big push for many, many years, the electric car revolution. Obviously, some people like Teslas. Outside of that, doesn't seem like much of this is working in the market. Yet they keep pushing them and pushing them. It does feel like over the past year or so, we've seen a real bottoming out of the hype on electric cars. My thought is that, you know, the government is going to do everything they can to make sure that these things stick around and they do wind up taking over. But the American people don't seem to want them. And a lot of these companies have had their, you know, market cap shrink by 70, 80, 90% over the past couple of years. What is the state of the electric car industry?
Bad, bad, and very bad. And I think what we've seen is that there's a saturation point. You can only find so many uber wealthy people that want a virtue signal by spending $65,000 and $80,000 and $120,000 for a Tesla. You know, there are only so many of those, and many of those have already done it. And I had a chance to drive a Tesla recently, and man, it's fun, but I'm not going to buy one for my own use because it's just not practical. It might be practical if you go from your home to the grocery store, your home to office, and be able to charge it in your home, as long as it doesn't catch fire in your garage. That would be things that do happen, but it wouldn't be very. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not uber wealthy, and I don't need the virtue signal. And it would cut into my high carbon lifestyle, which would be very bad for my image.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I would not think of you the same way, seeing you drive around a Tesla. I think you should have had that. If there's video of that, you need to have it banned from the internet, Greg, because that would just not work with your persona. Greg Wrightstone, yeah. Be sure to check out his newest book. It's called A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. As we said, this is our celebration of Earth Day today. Greg, thanks so much for coming on the program, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu.
Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
Well, it is Earth Day, and we will continue our ongoing tradition of pointing you to this very specific video from John Stossel covering the bane of all of our existences, recycling.
This recycling company is run by Lynn Hoffman.
If we're not using recycled paper and cardboard, we're cutting down more trees.
Recycling paper and cardboard does save trees. Recycling aluminum does save energy. But most of the other stuff is impractical to recycle.
That's right.
This is material that came in to the recycling facility from people's recycling carts and is going to leave as trash.
Huge amounts of what people send to her recycling plant will never be recycled. The worst is plastic, which for years has been marked with the recycling symbol.
We see stuff like this all the time. Recycling arrows on it. Please recycle. It's not recyclable.
By the way, they go in to say that about 5% of the plastic that you put in the bins actually gets recycled. About 5%. He also went on to talk about the fact that this is not new information. It's been known for years.
All my life, I've heard about how important it is to recycle.
It's not.
Science writer John Tierney debunked recycling claims years ago. His New York Times Magazine story, "Recycling is Garbage," set a record for Times hate mail. And yet, what you said is still true?
It's even more true today. In fact, the economics have just gotten worse.
Now, my city would save more than $300 million a year if it just stopped recycling.
Recycling is an industry that's using increasingly expensive labor to produce materials that are worth less and less.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything, it doesn't help anything, but people continue to do it despite the high cost. And you might think, well, we need to recycle because, well, we need all that landfill space. We're running out of landfill space. Yeah, that one's not true either.
If you think of the United States as a football field, all the garbage that we will generate in the next 1,000 years would fit inside a tiny fraction of the one-inch line.
Really? Oh, that's surprising.
On top of that, today's landfills are not the polluters they once were. Some sensible regulations make sure they don't pollute. Eventually, landfills are turned into ski hills, parks, and golf courses. Putting garbage here is much cheaper than recycling.
Sure is, and Stossel gets into the real reason as to why all this is happening as well. It's about control.
It's appalling that after telling people for three decades to recycle, they don't even apologize for all the time and money that they've wasted. Instead, they have an even worse proposal that will make life even worse and will be even more expensive.
But environmentalists still demand we pick through our trash, switch from plastic to paper bags that rip. California even banned small plastic shampoo bottles.
They still think so.
Why do you want to make life more difficult for travelers? Some of these rules are just so arbitrary and silly. It's simply a way, I think, for Greens and for some politicians to pretend that they're saving the planet. And it's
to
just
feel
absurd.
Good. It feels like they're doing something.
Right. And I think they get a charge out of telling people what to do.
The whole video is worth your time. I recommend it every single year around this time. It's up on my Twitter feed, twitter.com/StuDoesAmerica. Check it out. Recycling I can get into. You know, like, what if your food supply lasted forever? Let's say you could not recycle your food, but just have it grow food, grow, an endless amount of food that you might need in the case of an emergency. And when grocery store shelves are wiped clean after the next national emergency, you'll need that fail-proof food because you can't get access to food all the time. I mean, it's not guaranteed to you, as we found out over the past few years. Declare your food independence at preparewithstew.com. Pick up continuous food supply packed inside the survival seed vault from My Patriot Supply. They've been helping millions of American families since like 2008 with My Patriot Supply, helping you with self-reliance. And, you know, honestly, the survival seed vault from Patriot Seeds is a never-ending source of fresh foods and vegetables. So why wouldn't you want to get this? I mean, you're supposed to be eating your fruits and vegetables. I don't know if you are, but you should be. This is 20 varieties of zone-friendly 100% heirloom seeds that are triple sealed to protect them against the elements. Plant them right away or just wait. You know, you can wait years if you want. Grow, harvest, and replant fresh, delicious beans, greens, tomatoes, melons, more, whatever else you want. Go to preparewithstew.com, get your survival seed vault, and start planting a food supply that never stops. It's preparewithstew.com for My Patriot Supply. Preparewithstew.com. From Politico, prosecutors say Trump's hush money was election interference. Will jurors and voters believe it? I have a tough time believing voters will believe it, but jurors may very well believe it. Politico points out, the prosecution bears the burden of being seen as the least weighty of the four criminal cases Trump faces. And, you know, I keep hearing this over and over again. We should have Josh Hammer on or something at some point to go through this with us. But I keep hearing that everyone's saying that all the other cases are going to get past the election. They're going to be able to draw it out past the election. If that's true, and the only one he's facing is this one, I mean, I don't think this is even really that big of a factor in the election. I don't think his conviction here would make that big of a difference. In this particular case especially, I just don't think it's that big of a deal. We will see if the American people, of course, agree with that analysis. Another interesting development, one of the things I've talked about a lot when we look at polls, especially as it comes to RFK Jr., who is, you know, pretty obviously one of the top most prominent third-party candidates we've had in a long time. He just got the Natural Law Party nomination in Michigan, which means he's going to be on the ballot in Michigan. He'll probably be on the ballot in a lot of big states. And the question is, does he hurt Trump or Biden more? One of the reasons he was, you know, he came on with Glenn the other day basically to pitch himself as, I swear you should vote for me. I'm pretty much a conservative at this point. I don't buy it at all out of him. I know many of you do. Many people around here do. It's just not my opinion, particularly with RFK Jr. But the question is, if people do see him as this big conservative, then he's probably going to take votes from Donald Trump rather than Joe Biden. I would say up to this point, most of the evidence we've seen has shown it hurts Biden. He hurts Biden a little bit more. You know, maybe it's 60-40, 70-30, something like that, of the votes that go to RFK may have gone to Biden. However, a new poll out from NBC News says the opposite. NBC News poll finds third-party vote, especially independent RFK Jr., cutting deeper into former President Trump's support than President Biden's. Trump leads Biden by 2 in the head-to-head matchup, 46-44. But when the ballot is expanded, Biden is the one with a 2-point advantage. Biden 39, Trump 37, Kennedy 13, Jill Stein 3%, Cornel West 2%. Now, how seriously should you take this? I will eat an entire pecan roll in 5 minutes on the air if neither one of these candidates gets 40%. I'm promising you right now that is not going to happen. That poll is not going to. What do you want? Give me some dumb task to challenge myself with. If we get a situation where neither major party candidate gets 40%, I don't believe it at all. Let's put it that way. I don't know why pecan. I don't know where I even thought of that. Okay, so anyway, probably not going to happen. However, it does in this particular case. It's some evidence on the other side that maybe Trump is going to be hurt. Title IX has been expanded by Biden. Maybe we should do a whole segment on this week because they added basically gender identity. This is not a law. It's a regulation. It's just one of these things that can be overturned if Trump is to win, and probably will give Trump a really good thing to argue about because it basically is going to legally entrench some of the crazier gender theories. So maybe we'll get into that a little bit later this week. It's really bad, though, by Biden. We had Megyn Kelly on the air earlier today on radio to talk about it. It's a good interview if you're interested in the topic. And finally, Papua New Guinea leader has defended its nation against Biden's cannibal comment. We talked about this last week. Biden came in and was like, hey, my uncle was shot down in the war and then eaten by cannibals. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? Not only was we have no evidence that he was eaten by cannibals, but also we have no evidence that he was even shot down. It looks like he just went down with some mechanical error in the middle of the ocean, not even in this country. And basically, Biden's argument was, well, if he was in, he was near Papua New Guinea, and there's a lot of cannibals there. So the leader's like, hey, like, can you stop calling us cannibal nation? I mean, that's not really fair, not exactly what we want our tourism board to be promoting at this time. We will see if there's a typical fallback and apology by Biden coming down the road. Before we leave tonight, I want to give a quick congratulations to our own Pat Gray, a man who has fought for decades to get Foreigner into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and it has finally happened. Mary J. Blige, what? Cher, huh? Ozzy Osbourne, all right. A Tribe Called Quest, and Foreigner. get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It says there has been a starry push to get Foreigner into the hall, with Mark Ronson, Jack Black, Slash, Dave Grohl, and Paul McCartney all publicly backing the move. Where's Pat Gray's mention? This has been like the central focus of his life for 15 years, and they don't even mention it. But congratulations to Pat Gray of Blaze TV. You can subscribe blazetv.com/stew.